All right, guys, so this is the Brothers Wisps, number 27, take 8, I think. We actually recorded this, and it was brilliant. It was awesome. And then it turns out Greg forgot to turn on the audio. So we've done two test recordings thus far, so no more mistakes. So let's rehash everything that we hashed out before, only it's going to be way better this time because we practiced it once. So up at the top left, you see Justin Wilson out of Indiana. Say hi, Justin.
Hello, how y'all doing?
Excellent. And then we're up above in the top, tip top.
It's his birthday.
Tomorrow, yep.
Yeah, rock and roll.
This is the birthday edition.
The birthday edition. Word. All right, so up
above.
As long
as you're not in your birthday suit, we'll be good.
Oh, that's why he has the video off. Straight above us is Tom Smith out of Ireland. So you say you're in Dublin. Are you actually in Dublin, or are you just right outside of it?
Right outside of Dublin. Just, like, if you hit it with a nuclear weapon, I'd be pretty upset.
All right. That's not how I would phrase it, but whatever. Right in the top right corner, we have Mike Hammett out of Chicago. Mike, are you actually out of Chicago, or is that just the nearest thing that anybody will know?
No, about an hour out.
All right. Close enough
Jesus,
for my life.
Like, that's like nowhere near Chicago.
But if somebody hit it with a nuke, Mike would be pretty upset. So.
Well, to get to a metropolitan train is like a 15-minute drive. I mean, it's like I'm just outside.
Okay.
All right. And then over here to my left again, we've got Justin Miller, the beautiful, warm Justin Miller. He's Little Spoon, as I like to call him. Out of Virginia. Say hi, Justin.
Hi. Little Spoon.
The Little Spoon. Come on. And then just above me is Alex Hart. My bald head is covering his name. Otherwise, you would know that that's Alex. Alex out of the great state of Oregon, right? You're up in Portland, correct, sir?
That is correct.
All right. Beautiful man. And then we've got Tarmis Karnak, the fourth musketeer on board.
Did you call him Tarmis?
I did. It probably came out. It's Thomas Karnak. I'm sorry. I kind of
Close enough. Close enough. There you go. I don't mind.
Thomas is coming all the way out.
I don't think they have pirates
down there. Do
what? I don't think they have pirates down there.
How they?
Tarmis.
Ugh, that was awful. I hate you. Thomas is out of Slovakia, and he graciously woke up at 4 a.m. to be on this call. So, thank you so much, Thomas.
Everybody.
All right, and I am Greg Soule, and I'm out of the great nation of Texas, College Station, to be exact, where nobody knows where that's at, but it doesn't matter. And Tom's up there fondling his nipples to show you a shirt. That was terrific. I'm going to have that stuck in my, it's burned in my retinas. Let's see. So we're going to be talking about the MUM mostly. So the vast majority of these guys, save for these two schmucks on the right, actually made it to the Dallas MUM this year. So the last time we started, we talked quickly about the people we met that we thought were pretty cool. Because honestly, that's 50% of the reason I go is just to meet people and then to hang out with these complete weirdos, believe it or not. That and a Spoon Miller, obviously. So I met a guy named Quincy, who was a really cool cat tower guy, and he's kind of in the business of acquiring towers for the WISP sort of thing. And he had some really good tips, and I was asking him about being on a future show, and he expressed some interest, so that would be cool to talk to him. Because I've never talked to anybody that's like, yeah, I just own towers everywhere. So that was kind of a new concept. And he said it's actually a really interesting thing to sort of move towards. I got to meet a friend of Tom's, Lorenzo. He's very Italian. A lot of really good hand gestures and colorful sayings. It was brilliant. He's a really super clever guy. I guess the closest thing to a microtik evangelist I've ever heard. So he really loves the gear. He also did a really cool presentation, but we'll get to that later when we talk about presentations. And then Tom also pointed out last time the new training guy, Caspers. I remembered his name now.
Yeah.
So who else did you guys meet? Don't all speak at once. What do you got, Tom?
Did you meet anybody? I mean, cool? It's a lot of familiar faces to me. So, you know, it's you know, guys I talk to on a regular basis on Facebook or some of the WISP groups that you don't really see very often. So, I mean, it wasn't, you know, not that they're, you know, not interesting and cool, but, you know, they're kind of the old hands in the industry that it's nice to see some of them actually, you know, come out and come to an event.
Tim Payne, the guy, he's always at those things. He's a really nice guy. Ty, we met Ty in the flesh this time. He was a pretty cool guy. I met a guy named Raphael, and I think you talked to him for a little while, Miller. He's out of
Nigeria.
Nigeria, Liberia, in that area, and he does
There was two guys from Nigeria. They both knew the other guy from Nigeria that we know, AB. It's weird. It's getting a lot of traction there in that area.
Yeah, you know? It's awesome. Yeah, I mean, it's become a real hotbed over there. And that Raphael guy, he does like these hot zones. So when there's like an Ebola outbreak, his group like flies in and then does all the comms back and sets up videos and like to help doctors see the patients and diagnose. Which I thought was, man, that's some amazing stuff. He was talking about how the people that he had flown on the plane to get back over here to the States, that one of them came down with Ebola, like the guy that was sitting next to him. So he's doing some crazy stuff, man. That's awesome. Anybody else talk to me? Alex, did you meet anybody new?
I met a guy named John Brown, who I guess most of you are familiar with already.
Yeah, that was my first time meeting him.
Okay. So we're talking to him. I guess he's got quite a bit of dark fiber around the States. So.
Yeah, that was pretty cool. Yeah. Met,
I met light up some of him.
Who else do you have, Tom?
John Price. He was pretty cool, yeah.
Dave from California, the telecom, the VoIP guy, he was a pretty cool guy. I got to see him again. Oh, and then Alex's boss, Tom, actually came, and he was a pretty cool cat. He's he reminds me of a very San Francisco sort of guy.
Yeah.
Did you ever watch the Tested podcast?
No.
All right, there's a guy on there named Norm. No, Will, and he's like a clone of that guy. So
okay.
Look him up. Tell him I said so.
Well, we also met David, Andrew's boss.
Oh, yeah,
he was there.
Yeah, without a doubt. That's the second time I got to meet that guy, and he's super cool. I really dig him.
Yeah.
Yeah, he's a lot of fun.
July.
That was my first time actually seeing Andrew in person. So I was fun to meet him.
That was my second time. So first time I didn't. First time it was in
Vegas.
I can't remember.
Probably Vegas.
Yeah, Vegas. That was the only other time he's been here. Yeah.
Yeah.
Which was the first time I met him, too. So.
Yeah,
and this, so it was the first time Tom met him, too, right?
Yeah, no, it was deadly to see him in the flesh.
Yeah, it's really weird. I assume that if I know people, all of you guys know people, too. So I just, it's such a small world, it's weird.
You know the most people, let's be honest.
I don't think so. I'm too unfriendly.
My Skype crashed.
You're still going. I see you. All right, so talked about the
Casper
folks we
was
met.
Pretty cool cat. You know, it's nice to meet him. He's been with the company about 6 months, I think. So
yeah, he was still really excited. A lot of energy. He they're focusing him strictly on kind of the training, and I think he's doing some of the MUM sort of run and the presentation stuff as well. So
yeah,
it's nice to see them really branching out and kind of getting more focused on what they're doing instead of running around. Mm-hmm. Wearing 15 hats trying to get stuff done.
He was a super cool guy, real personable. I talked to him for probably 20 minutes. He was talking about how he taught technically at a university for like 10 years and then switched over to Microtik. So he's got a lot to bring to the table. It's going to be really good.
Yeah, no, he seems like a nice guy and seems enthusiastic as well. So let's see how he gets on, see if we can wear him down.
I think they forewarned him of your potential attacks, Tom. So,
I wouldn't call them attacks, but they could be seen as attacks. But there's certainly unusual ways of making points that might be considered offensive from time to time.
I have no idea. No idea what you're talking about. All right, so we met a lot of folks. Let's talk about some of the presentations we saw. I think almost everybody from the Brothers Wisp that went there actually gave a presentation, which I think is tremendous. Pretty soon it's going to be that's the only way you're going to get on the board is if you're part of the group, which makes me think maybe we just need to split off our own conference and just start doing our own thing. So I saw several. I saw Lorenzo's. He had the map light, or the map and map light as the Swiss Army knife. That was a tremendous presentation. I think one of you guys was talking about how it surprised you probably as much as it did me. Who was it?
That was me. I was just saying, you know, kind of going into it, I was saying Swiss Army knife, yeah, I can see that, and just expected it to be a pretty run-of-the-mill presentation, but he actually did a lot of cool things that I thought, oh, that actually takes it to the next level for having a map light or something in your bag.
Oh, yeah, it was super cool. The idea of running...
The idea of having VPNs that automatically connect that give you a different SSID to tie into those, and I thought it was clever how he had different tiers using QoS of... he's got his free buddy Wi-Fi, his VIP Wi-Fi, his you can pay me money, here's my PayPal link Wi-Fi.
Yeah. You know, I actually got a little jealous because it's such a simple yet clever solution. It's like whenever I go to IKEA and I open a drawer and it does something so clever. I'm just like, man, I wish I could have thought of that. But yeah, like a little script that makes a light come on if he has internet connection, then another light come on to verify that his VPN works. It's really, really clever. He's a really sharp cat. So definitely got to give him props for that. What else did I see? David, the telecom guy doing the VoIP stuff was really good. He did a little Wireshark capture and then decoded it and played back the audio. And then he had some good tips and tricks for, if you're getting audio quality, how do you kind of prove to your customers this way or that way? So as service providers, a lot of time, it's not just making sure our environment's up, but proving that it's operating as per policy. So he had some good tips for that, which I thought was really good. And then Tom, obviously, gave a killer DDoS presentation. And as promised, he said he wasn't going to recycle any slides, and he didn't. He created them all live on the fly.
And, I don't think I had a choice.
Yeah.
Well, no, I said I'd make a change, but I was hoping to do it about 2 weeks beforehand, and I kind of enforced it, but I was actually quite busy so with some contract work, so it was actually, I got fed all the time, so yeah, I was doing it right up to the last minute, I think. So.
Absolutely the last minute. I still remember, yeah, because Disher was going before you, and you were finishing up as he was getting done, and then went on, so it was pretty brilliant, which just meant it was really fresh and it smelled like it came right out of the oven, which was good.
Thank you very much.
Absolutely. And so we recounted, I guess, I don't know, what are we going to call it, the Tom counter? So it's how many kind of obscenities can he work in or odd things. So he called
Let's not forget. Go ahead.
I was going to say, he said dickheads. He said that once. Bigger router bitches, and then he dropped the F-bomb to a bunch of people out the door right in the middle of the presentation and kindly asked Microtik to edit that part out of the live stream.
I don't think they did, though. But anyway.
So they just need a bleep button just ready, just a bleep, mute button.
Let's not forget the mic drop that he did at the end.
Oh, there you go. Yeah. Yeah, the very last minute he picks up the wireless mic, walks away so that he can drop it and then walk back. It is ridiculous. Such a drama queen. It's the showmanship.
Well, having said that, I think it was your idea. You said, are you going to drop the mic or was it Miller's? I don't know which one of you said, are you going to like drop the mic at the end?
I said,
yeah, it actually sounds like a good idea.
I say,
and then Obama stole the idea then the following day at the White House press conference.
Yeah, so all this political diplomacy you've been working on, I mean, it's really paying off. It's good.
Absolutely, we're going to start taking over things, you know. Sorry, guys.
That's brilliant. And then Wilson up there gave a lot of tips and tricks for all kinds of stuff, which I thought was really great. Do you want to literate?
That's one of those things, you know, I want people to walk away with, you know, hey, I can think about this on the plane home or, you know, something like that.
Yeah, and I think some people, when they do their presentations, they think they have to give some like an entirely complete solution. And I think a lot of times you just have to plant a seed, you know, just kind of introduce people to concepts and ideas, something they can research later. You know, Scott, I didn't know you could do that or this. So
I think you did a good job with that, too, of you kind of had a broad topic of doing security and whatnot, but you had multiple sections throughout of different ways to make your network available, highly available.
Oh, yeah, the high availability stuff. I like that. Because there's, I had people ask me about kind of every different little section, you know, so it just, one thing would intrigue a guy, another thing would intrigue somebody, so, you know. I was talking to Giannis, and he was saying that the European moms are so big because they have tons of first-time users that have hardly even used a MikroTik, right? So a lot of newbies, so stuff like this really applies to them. He said in the U.S. moms, it's a lot of fanboys is what he called us, which...
Yeah, fanboys.
I don't know. You say fanboy, it's got... I think of, like, Apple fanboys or, you know, other manufacturers' fanboys.
Oh, yeah.
And so...
I know, if you had to wait in line to get into the mom, you would.
I don't know. I would just come late, I think. I would just wait for it. Come on, we're royalty now, right? We're celebrities. Somebody has watched us, at least one person, so we're internet famous now. That's how that works. So yeah, that was good. Let's see what other.
Don't forget the scripting skill by Cox.
Andrew Cox, right? Andrew with his bright Wi-Fi stuff, pimping that stuff hard. He did a really good scripting introduction, and then actually put some scripts in there. And I thought it was really great. Again, he had entire scripts in there, but he didn't try to explain every line, just form and function, and gave you some ideas on how things work, which I think is great. The scripting part for me, whenever I write a script, it's about every year, like actually maybe once a year, and so it's just long enough for me to forget how everything works, and I have to go back and reference everything. So having some kind of quick jumps in, I think, is terrific, even for people that are accustomed to it. I'm looking at Thomas, and I'm sure he needs no quick pick back ups because this kid's always coding. He does more coding than any other network engineer I've ever met. Care to comment?
I will say the other cool thing about Andrew's scripting, his presentation was one of the last ones, but several of the other presentations said, oh yeah, I had Andrew script this for me. So it's kind of this plug of leading up to, all right, I got to meet this guy, Andrew, and see what he can actually do. So, one of them, they use one of his scripts to generate like 32 virtual access points.
Mm-hmm. Lorenzo.
With some pretty clever names.
Yeah. Andrew's always up for helping out. And I guess he's become the de facto sort of scripting guy now. So I'm sure more of that's going to keep coming his way, whether he wants it or not.
Yeah.
That's cool.
All right. Any other presentations you guys saw that you liked? No? All right.
Well, I guess we can talk about the MikroTik product presentation.
The new hardware or announcements or...
I liked the FastPath explanation. That was more in-depth than I've ever seen him do. That was pretty good for me.
That one, I watched the European one, and it seemed very similar. I think maybe there were some additions. If it's a Giannis presentation, there's usually going to be some meat to it, which is good. Let's see, new hardware wise. Alex, you got the list on the new hardware, right?
Yeah, the WAP AC was one thing that was announced. It's pretty exciting. Kind of the unified competition, small, nice looking AC router. It's only $90, which is just phenomenal for a dual band triple chain AC device. It also does MikroTik's getting into a lot more of the 802.3AF and AT active PoE, which is, I think, pretty cool. So that's supposed to be shipping soon. They've also got the Hex PoE, which is also going to have active PoE output on four of the ports, as well as input. So presumably you could use that to power not only the WAP AC, but Unify or any other PoE device. So that's kind of cool that they're, like I said, getting into the PoE standards.
That's cool.
What else do they have? Go ahead.
Some of the software features, like what you were talking about, I think you were on the forum hot and heavy with the interface list feature, so you can zone all your interfaces together, which I think is a really big feature, and the dropping of the ability to drop packets before they go into the contract table as well, which is kind of nice for DDoS mitigation as well. So some kind of cool software features that did require version 7, the mythical.
So Tom's talking about in the firewall section, they added the ability to do security zones, right?
Yeah.
It's interface lists. So similar to address lists where you have IPs and subnets, you can create lists of interfaces. And rather than having multiple rules, if you have similar rules for different interfaces, now you can just have one rule for a group of interfaces. So I don't know about you guys, but for me, like that just cut my firewall rule list in half. So that's pretty cool. I was actually surprised. That's kind of a cool feature, and they didn't even mention it at the MOM.
You know, and
well, I did.
Like, well, they were announcing new hardware and new features, and they talked about some other things, but that's kind of a cool feature to not even be mentioned.
Yeah, and I was talking to Giannis about what's the. So jokingly, I saw he wasn't up there doing the new presentation, the first one in the morning where they announce all this stuff. And I said, obviously, they're not announcing version 7 because you would be up there. Nobody's going to steal your thunder. And he was saying that, we're not waiting on the mums anymore to do announcements. He said, that's what he said. So hardware-wise, anyway, he's like, just as it comes to us, we're spitting it out, so... I don't know. What were you going to say, Tom?
That said, they also said that they were going to do about one MUM a week. So there's not really much of a wait.
They had been doing one a week on average since the beginning of the year, I think is what they said. Just crazy. The other thing they announced was they're starting to ship their new wireless package, the wireless rep package that's supposed to give you background scanning and some better wireless repeater support, stuff that you see some of the other vendors already doing, but it's cool that they're making an effort to add features, functionality, stability, performance to their wireless package.
Yeah, it's pretty cool.
Yeah, I'm getting more and more excited about the MikroTik wireless there for the longest time. It just seemed very unattractive, NV2 would just kind of perform along, but nothing was really, sexy about it. You could put up a link and it performed great, but you couldn't do a lot of neat things with it. But now they're coming around and, kind of refocusing on wireless for a little bit. And I think that just goes back to, they have more people to do.
Yeah. No, the scan to file functionality now, which we've been asking for the longest time, so you can diagnose a remote client why it's dropping off. You can do kind of scans and then it'll scan to a file and you can actually look at the scan after the fact once you reconnect. We've been asking that for some time. Hopefully they'll work on the point-to-multipoint performance of the MikroTik now as well. Like the point-to-point performance has been phenomenal, but the point-to-multipoint, we were just discussing like the need for some sort of sync or something like that for very dense sites, so that all the APs are transmitting at the same time so they don't hear each other. So they're all listening, so the site is quiet when you're actually listening to the client, so that you don't have a lot of interference, because currently, if you do scan on sites, the interference that you're causing for yourself is quite significant. So obviously I think the likes of EPMP from Cambium solved that problem with sync, so it'd be nice to see some, and there is talk that they're looking at some sort of sync method, but I'm not too sure where it is at the moment with it, how far away it is. It could be released next week, probably not. or it could be, you know, a year, year and a half down the line, you know.
Yeah.
It's a tricky thing to implement, but very important, I think.
I guess it's a question of, you know, would you have rather them spit out a GPON CPE piece or a GPS sync piece? Which do you think you would have preferred?
For me, because I'd not do that much of the fiber, I'd be on the. But I think a lot, for like, let's say a lot of their core client base, let's say micro in Europe particularly, which would use a lot of MikroTik, I think the other one would be a good bit more popular. But then again, you'd have to ask the boys how many GPONs they've sold, you know, versus. I'm not too sure. Like, what's your thoughts on GPON versus just point to point? Like, what way would you feel about it? You know, so like just an Ethernet based fiber.
We really need to get a lot of GPON minds together and just have them bash it out. I've, you know, even trying to pick a single vendor, you know, that seems best in class. Everybody has their own opinion. Everybody's tried. It seems more than one vendor, and nobody can settle on one. And you know, they'll talk about Calyx. You know, they're great support in the U.S., but sometimes, you know, it's just too expensive and they can't make it work. You know, or this vendor will have supply chain issues, or Huawei. They're really great and inexpensive, but support is non-existent. Right? So nobody can. And then I've talked to guys who said they've tried three or four different manufacturers and now they're switching to Active Ethernet just because they couldn't make it work. So. I don't even know where to begin with that stuff.
I've seen a few providers too. They get locked into a certain hardware manufacturer's gear, and they get, you know, down the road where they want to integrate something like IPv6 into their network, and they can't because the hardware doesn't support it, and they have no idea when the vendor will add support for it. So it's difficult when you get kind of locked into a older feature set.
Oh yeah, and whenever you pick a vendor, you're pretty much married to them. You know, it's like, yeah. You know, you meet somebody and you marry them on the first date. You know, it's kind of, it's a sort of weird relationship we have. You know, whereas if you're going Active-E, you can basically use anybody's gear, and it's gonna work. You know, just pick the back end system that's gonna do all the management administration that you really like and need, and you can go from there. I don't know.
It's In the world of less expensive on the GPON platforms, Chuck Hogg has been doing quite a bit of work with that. He's a WISP board member, past president, and he had deployed gear from Dasan Networks. They're a Korean company, I believe, and. He ended up, you know, it was really liking it, and then ended up, they just didn't really have a good channel in the U.S., and so he moved over to Alfian. I think Alfian is Indian. Yeah, Indian. And he's really loving their gear, really loving the whole company. You know, they're much more affordable than some of the names you typically hear about, where it's Alkaloo or... Calyx or something like that, but then Dasan turns around and buys Zone, you know, one of the probably most well-known names in fiber to the home, and they were just bought by the company that couldn't figure out how to build a channel. Well, I guess they just bought a channel, so maybe we'll have some cheap gear that you can get, or we'll have expensive gear that you can't get. I don't know which we'll end up with.
Yeah. It's just, I don't know. It doesn't seem like there's... I don't know. I haven't figured out a good system or methodology for finding information on vetting this stuff. Or I really just need to make friends with experts. Chuck, and I've talked to him before, he's a really open guy, and he's definitely into sharing knowledge, mm-hmm. so we might be able to get him on. And just chat him up about it. But I want a few different perspectives, you know, a couple of different people. I know JJ's been doing a little bit, so he might be a good one. And I've talked to a couple other folks, and it might be good to kind of crash them all in. We'll have to check that one out for later. Talking about on the MikroTik, kind of circling back on the hardware front, they also did like a LH5 5 grid thingamajig. What was that, Alex?
A light head grid antenna.
There you go.
Yeah.
And I picked it up.
LHG5.
Yeah, and when they say light, they really mean light. It's like a honeycomb sort of
hexagonal interesting design, right?
Pattern, and then it's just a little metal mesh on top. And I don't know
I think
that it
a
could...
lot of people. I think a lot of people are disappointed because it had built-in radio, but it's only 802.11 AN. So, in the
not
world
AC?
Of not AC,
why would they build a new N anything?
Yeah.
Oh, it's exactly. Quite cheap, right? It's
it keeps the cost down, I guess. But
what's the price point on it? I'm not even sure what the street price was going.
What are they?
I'm sure there's an AC one coming. They always seem to
list price is $59.
Come out with something afterwards. The upgrade.
Well, the thing to keep in mind too is like what we were talking about earlier. You know, countries like, Africa and places like that, the U.S. isn't the, MikroTik's major market.
Yeah.
It's these emerging company or countries where, price is a big deal. So if you can, it's the U.S., 10 years ago, if you can get if you can get 10 megs across to, the village across the road, that's more than they have now. And so they're concerned about. Price.
Yeah,
in radio is an in radio is the equivalent of a G radio. When in first came out, it's not that big of a stretch for them.
Yeah, fair point.
They've got their SXT Lite 5 AC for $65. That's just $6 more, and you've got AC. Granted, it's not going to be the same game. So
yeah,
I guess you've got a point. Maybe they start out with the lower, the cheaper radio and add the AC model later.
Or also, it's probably if you look at overall MikroTik deployments, there's a lot more in infrastructure still out there. So still being able to support that and clients being able to just, I guess, reach further out to their existing towers maybe.
It's also probably a late deployment, as in it's been delayed, the release of that, so... it was designed for N in mind, and probably they wanted to release it 2 years ago. We couldn't get it quite working, Well, now they have it working, so they'll release that, make money off the N model, and then they'll release the AC model probably in about 6 months' time. It's probably, They probably wanted it ages ago.
I guess they do have the Dynadish, which is half a dB more, and it's an AC model. So
it's
probably
quite
where they're
expensive,
thinking,
though.
Yeah, it's $179, so you add $120 to it. But they're probably thinking we have our top end AC long range point to point dish.
And now
they've added the cheaper CP.
To put things in comparison, I know there's a feature set difference, but Ubiquiti's light beam list price for the AC version is $59. List price for the N version is $49.
Yeah,
That's 23 dB, so it's a dB and a half less, but it's already cheaper.
Right. So just since you mentioned the Dynadishes, do you know anybody running them?
I don't either.
No, we've been kind of conservative on our point-to-point links. We're using a lot of Jira stuff. For point-to-point dishes, we'd kind of build our own kit that way.
Yeah, I was just curious if anybody's tried it. So that was the new hardware stuff, I guess, to kind of put it.
No, we forgot one.
Did we? I don't have the list.
Yeah, we forgot about the new Omnitik.
That's right. The new. It's the AC Omnitik.
Oh yeah, that's right. Yeah, it's the one where they. It's kind of a unibody. Mold where the
instead of having
the
two
separate
antennas
anymore,
like,
it's all
like
bridged
gears.
Together.
Yeah, uh-huh. It looks more like a car.
Gotcha, it's unisex. Like, I get it.
Yeah.
Which bathroom does it use?
It's asexual. There you go. Has no preference. That's cool. And then last time, so this is jogging my memory. Last time, I was asking who actually Because I've never used an OmniTick of any kind, and I was asking which of you guys, and several of you guys have used OmniTick successfully, right?
I've been quite a few of them, and I'm really happy that the new one is coming along, because the old one is fairly old at this point, so it was time for an upgrade, and I'm happy they are bringing it back.
Yeah, that's fair. Now, is that new OmniTick, is that AC?
Yes, it's AC.
Okay. Yeah, those are pretty neat too, because they've got the extra Ethernet ports on them, so you can end up using it as a way to tie in a point to point for your bandwidth, and then spill it out. I could see that for a lot of Wi-Fi deployments coming in handy.
Doesn't it?
Yeah, we put several up for little apartment complexes that were, maybe the clubhouse is in the center and, 20 yards away is the, starts a square of the buildings around them. And, it's perfect for that sort of a setup.
Very cool. Very cool. I was going to ask the OmniTick, so the ports out, are they PoE ports?
I think the number 5 is probably PoE out.
All right.
They did have one
originally, one of the old ones that had all the ports.
Powered. Yeah, originally they were two models, so you could get a U model, which was UP power model, and then without the PoE power. But the new one, I think, is just one PoE out port. But I can't imagine the full PoE out is far away.
Okay, so while we're talking about new hardware, And that's all for the MikroTik stuff, right, everybody? Yeah?
I think so. The other thing I'll say on the presentations, it looks like they have got all the YouTube and PDF links up. So if anybody wants to go back, you can go to mommikrotik.com and click on the agenda for the U.S. and find all the links.
They've really been on their game. Oh. They've been stepping it up, getting that stuff up quick.
Yeah, and the change log, 181 changes, they highlighted that, and a lot of people have been expressing they've noticed a change in MikroTik internally, and MikroTik's been stepping up their game and fixing bugs that are really old or really working hard at getting their product, their OS as stable as they can before jumping
to 7, I think. I guess. In the last two major releases, they've fixed, I think, 3 of the bugs that I have reported that were, many of them were like 3 or 4 years old, and I had completely just given up. And they finally released the new bug fixes and features that I asked for. So, and I know a lot of you have said the same thing. So it's cool to see that they're actually fixing things and including it in the change log.
Yeah, I think Alex, you, Thomas, and Andrew Thrift have been just kind of back and forth saying, "Holy crap, they just fixed that. They just fixed that." I've been waiting so long for that. Their transparency with the changelog is getting so much better. I think the community at large is actively seeing them making changes. We're talking about version 7 at the last go around and why it hasn't dropped or whatever. And I think indications seem like they're trying to really shore up version 6, and harden it and fix as much as they can before they deploy any more time and energy into it. Something I had heard was that even if they really dedicated a chunk of time, they could probably do it in less than a month. But that beta wouldn't be ready for, prime time production for like a year after that. So even if you did see it spit out, it's not really going to be ready for prime time anytime soon. Mm-hmm. Or something else. What was it? The cloud-hosted router, did they get some new drivers or something? Was that something that came out? Tom, I remember you were talking about something about it.
Oh, yeah, no, like, I think it's the... I was just talking about it because I suppose it was a year since it was released, or it was released in the intervening year, but, it's great that they have the power virtualization drivers finally for the likes of VMware, and they've been working hard to kind of get them out, so obviously that... If there was a router I wanted, that's the one I wanted, So it's I'm quite happy with that. Price points are still a bit low, I think, for the support model to try and improve a support model. like that 24/7 kind of, you know, being able to get bug fixes quickly and stuff like that. You know, it's very hard. It's very hard kind of tap that enterprise market if you don't have the cavalry on the hill. So I think it'd be interesting to see that kind of license level 8 and 9 where you're getting like really rapid response, but you're paying for it. Like, I mean, be interesting to see if they were going to experimentally do it, but it's kind of hard to see how they'll do it with the kind of the licensing levels they have currently, like with the 1 gig, the 10 gig, and then the, you know, the price points of it are quite low, I think.
Well, I mean,
maybe support will be a separate payment model.
Yeah. I was going to say, compare them to 5 years ago or 4 years ago. They seem like, I'm not going to say an entirely new company, but very different now and moving in a different direction. It seems like more customer focused, I would say, which is good, which is really good. Yeah. So now that we've beat the MicroTik horse to death, I wanted to jump in and talk about Ubiquiti Horse. Today they announced that they're marketing to the consumer market officially, I guess now. Is that what they've said with these new?
Basically, they've launched a whole separate website for this new platform.
And so it looks like a Nest, but it's not actually a Nest. It's like a Wi-Fi router, and it's got a couple of little boosters you can plug in the wall that'll, from what I understand, automatically pick up the signal and then pump it back out. Does that seem right?
Yeah.
That's what they say.
And so I'm guessing it's like a repeater package, right? So it's just picking up Wi-Fi. I know they show it plugging into the wall, and somebody was speculating that it was going to be Ethernet over power, but I'm assuming it's just a pickup and rebroadcast. Is that right?
That's what it looks like. And a lot of them, not to beat the AC van horse again, but unless you go with the Amplify HD, a lot of the repeaters are doing in. And supposedly, I don't know. You're going to lose throughput when you're repeating, and then to drop to a lower band, you're going to lose even more throughput. So I think you're having to invest quite a bit of money in order to get the full AC throughput throughout your house.
I think most of us need to remember that we don't live in Portland, where we get incredible connections at our house. Like, I'm rocking a 50 meg connection right now, so that All right. would be more than sufficient for me. As sad as that sounds. But I'm going to go out on a limb and speculate here. well, it's not really speculation. I think it's pretty obvious to everybody. If they're going to launch this new kind of core center consumer device, they're going to start launching peripherals that snap right into that. So I'm assuming there's going to be cameras. There's probably going to be some kind of home security sort of ish thing. I'm not sure how far they'll go down that rabbit hole. What else do you guys see that magically integrates with this box coming out?
There's a lot of home automation stuff. I don't know if they're going to get into it. They tried that with the M5 stuff, and that kind of tanked.
Well, they already had quite
a big portfolio in that. So like just recycling or repackaging, or you know,
that's all this is, right? They have their Unify platform. And it's more targeted at the enterprise market. So now they're taking that same experience in hardware, changing a little bit, rebranding it, putting it in a square box, and calling it Amplify. So, yeah, okay. I think you're right. They have a lot of experience with doing the M5 stuff, and so if they take the team and the hardware that they've already developed and sell it in a little bit more user-friendly package.
All right. I feel like with the M5 stuff, they were marketing that to the wrong environment. I don't think the Wisp environment was the one to really shoot that stuff towards. So, like, specifically targeting the consumer market, I think, is kind of a better avenue for that.
Well, yeah. And like with this, on this Amplify thing, I think they probably saw the Google router and said, yeah, we can do that. And then made their own version of it.
There's also another company called Eero, E-E-R-O.com. And they kind of launch something very similar where they're saying, hey, you come to us, you buy us. Rather than a single router and a single repeater, you come buy a solution, and this will cover your whole house, and you don't have to deal with like how to connect it all. So it seems pretty similar to that. And compared to that, I guess they're coming in a couple hundred dollars cheaper, so that's cool. But I don't know. I look at the $90 AC wall mount access point that Microtik just brought to the table, and it's...
The Amplify has Bluetooth as well.
Does it?
Yeah, Bluetooth Low Energy, so you program it from your cell phone.
Okay.
Pair it with your cell phone, you program it. It says, the smart way to support your Internet of Things now and in the future.
Got it.
Right on their site. So.
Boom.
The Internet of Things. Wonderful.
It might be kind of interesting because obviously we now have Halo, which is a wireless alliance standard, and Bluetooth low powered and all the stuff like that. So,
did you guys look at the website at all?
I didn't.
I scrolled down and it's like designed for your future. Amplify's modular home IoT solution offers an incredible, powerful network coming soon.
That's cool. I was in jury duty all day, so I got bits and pieces.
Didn't they say the same thing about, you know, MFI and all that stuff too?
Oh, it's really... marketing, right? You have to say all kinds of magical things.
Yeah. And then deliver really quickly. It's,
yeah, they have the Internet of Things, in fairness.
The trick is saying all the magic words, but not having too much info so that you actually understand what's coming and what it can do.
Absolutely. So in the last switching back, so I'm going to switch back to kind of a different topic that we went into last time. Somehow we got onto switches, and I think we were talking about the CRS switches, right? Isn't that their acronym?
Yeah.
Uh-huh. And Thomas, I'm not saying he went on a diatribe, but he had a lot of interesting points to talk about it, because we were just talking about how we never talk about switches on here. And so we were kind of comparing the functions and features of the CRS line and the different models they have and how they function, and then comparing them to kind of industry standard switches. And I'm going to let Thomas ease us back into that, because it was tremendous information. Obviously, every time Thomas talks, I learn something new. So I'd really love to rehash that stuff so I can properly articulate it to other people so they think I came up with it.
So yeah, last time I had like, what, a 3 or 4 minute monologue about all of that. So are we going to try to replicate that?
Your switch manifesto, let's hear it. So yeah. You're talking about, for first, which I thought was really interesting, is you're talking about the different model numbers of the CRS and what that actually means, hardware and feature-wise.
Microtik actually has two, I guess you could say, lines inside of the CRS family, right? You have the 1 series and the 2 series. And the 1 series has a more powerful CPU, well, relatively more powerful. It's 680 megahertz. But the switch chip that is in there has actually a few features cut out. And then you have the 200 series, which is more of a switch but less of a router. So the switch ASIC is actually more feature-rich, but the CPU is only 400 megahertz. And so you have kind of a split inside of the CRS family there. And basically, like the features even in the 100 series for the switch chip are, you know, enough for most of the use cases at least. But it's still interesting that they would choose to split it this way.
One example of that, I'm looking at their wiki, and I see that the 100 series has 4,064 byte jumbo frame support. They're calling it jumbo frame support, but really everybody expects 9,000 or more,
yeah.
Which they have in the 200 series, but not in the 100 series.
So last time I was explaining how for me the CRS, the whole series, the 1 and the 2 series, is kind of a love-hate thing. You know, I have a love-hate relationship with Microtik CRS switches. Because it's things like this, you know, if you are going to deploy a switch to an enterprise, to a real, you know, network where you care about your layer 2 segment and you want, like, a high redundancy on layer 2, and you, you know, we were also saying last time that, or Greg was, I think, saying that switches are usually approached like a boring thing. You know, you buy it, you configure it, and you forget about it. For me, it's not that simple at all, because, like, for us, we have a highly meshed layer 2 core, and like, all of our layer 2 is quite highly meshed. And also, that's one thing that you can't do on a Microtik. Because currently there is no spanning tree support inside of the hardware, and you also don't have LHCP, so port trunks, or you know, you don't have that support inside of the hardware either.
Yeah, something that really kind of stuck with me was the fact that you could do this this trick with MAC addressing to VLAN, so you can kind of it's almost like a wildcard string, so you can do like the manufacturer portion of the Mac and have anything that shows up on that Mac automatically jump into its own VLAN, right? So for like VoIP appliances or you know, just different things. So like grand stream phones, you can have them automatically jump in. So it can do crazy powerful things. I mean, there's a lot of potential for a feature like that. But then there's kind of, you know, features that are missing, like STP or LACP, you know. So it's interesting. There's so much power and potential, and then, you know, and then something that also gets me is they don't use kind of industry standard terms a lot of times, you know. So tagging and untagging, it's sort of a wacky way they do it. I totally get that once you figure it out and you can follow their methodology, I just wish that you could figure it out in 30 minutes instead of several hours.
I think what they did with the whole configuration interface is, they have a chip that's super powerful, and rather than look at a workflow, what they've done is saying, right, what can this switch do? Okay, there's a function for swapping MAC addresses, there's a function for swapping VLAN tags. So what we'll do is we'll expose all the functionality of the chipset and then work out how we can actually make this, like, you know, so it's like almost like an experimental platform in ways. And then, like, I think in the future they'll have it, like, okay, we have all those funky things, so we can leave that crazy, like, you know, I won't say crazy, I mean, like, very esoteric settings and very complex stuff that some engineer somewhere will use someday, that they won't find in any other switch chip, to be fair, or switch vendor.
I feel like they need to have, like, a quick set thing for the switching for the workflow. You know, they got the quick set to make home AP and, you know, router and all that stuff. A quick set for, you know, how many ports you want and which tags and that kind of thing. It would be awesome.
Well, you have Tom's favorite advanced mode button.
Yeah.
That,
Well, you know, like, I'd rather see, rather than quick set, kind of a bespoke mode, like, as in one for enterprise networking. Because enterprise networking guys generally have a different approach to, let's say, ISP networking guys, you know, in terms of, you know, most of the enterprise stuff, it'll be like switch port, you know. So if you're talking about, let's say, iOS configuration, switch port mode access, switch port mode trunk, you know, what VLANs are allowed, you know, that type of stuff, port isolation, port protection. Like, those kind of unlock those features, but kind of have it like as an enterprise. Like, is the switch going to be used as an enterprise or as an ISP? And then kind of have an interface that has workflows that work for those particular models.
Yeah, absolutely.
Not so gone on quickset type, quickset versus insanely complex.
Well, and also to your point, talking about enterprise, I'm not always installing switches for me just to use, right? So if I'm configuring something for a customer, you know, maybe they just want something to start with and they want to pick up and go from there. And if they're used to Cisco
and Juniper
or Big Iron or any of that stuff, yeah, they want something they can kind of easily jump into. And it's just, yeah, it makes it a little bit harder.
The other thing that I get frustrated with is you take a CCR or a HAP or a HEX or, you know, different devices. Yeah, they all run router OS, but the way that they implement the switch features like VLANs is like there's no continuity across this hardware platforms that you expect to be there. So that's frustrating. And also, like you said, you expect certain things to be there. I was really surprised last time we were talking to find out that it doesn't have STP and LACP, and today learning that the jumbo frame support only goes to 4,000 something bytes. Like, you just says jumbo frames that it goes to 9,000, and you don't look for those basic things. You just assume that they're going to be there in a switch these days that you buy. And I'm also waiting to see when they're going to release standard like 24 and 48 port models. You've got other vendors that they compete with, like Ubiquiti, that's got their edge switch, and they've got all those features, and they're a competitive price point, and they have 48 port switches, and they also have switches that have standard PoE output. Whereas the only thing that MikroTik has coming right now that I know of is their X PoE that's got the standard active PoE output. So it'll be interesting to see if they can take what they have, add features that you expect to the hardware and software, and make it usable and compete with what's out there at a reasonable price point.
Yeah. How long do you guys have any estimation of how long the CRSs have been on the market now?
I think it's been a year and a half at least.
Yeah, seems like it's coming up on a couple of years, right?
Yeah, I was thinking about 2 years.
Yeah,
but so, like, well, you know, all these situations said, the MikroTik of today, you look that, you know, hopeful that they will solve these problems. 5 years ago, MikroTik would that's a dead product because they're never gonna fix the problem. But now.
Oh. Yeah, if you look at the history, like, MikroTik already has switches, right? The Switch OS stuff. And it seems that Switch OS has been abandoned at this point. I mean, they're still selling the 260s, but the last Switch OS release was, I think, 2 years ago by this point. So it will be interesting to see if and what they decide to do with the CRS, because there hasn't been any new hardware releases inside of the CRS line for at least a year, so there hasn't been any new hardware like Alex said coming out, and the software side there hasn't been anything for at least a year as well that I remember, like any major features implemented on the CRS ASICs. So we'll see, I guess. And yeah, last time also I talked about the Ubiquiti edge switches. Mm-hmm. And I am not really a Ubiquiti fan, but the edge switches are actually really good. I was really surprised with them. I deployed quite a few of them at this point. They work. They have a great feature set. They have PoE, which is actually passive PoE, as well as AT and AF PoE, and you can actually choose which PoE the port does, which is great. Because at this price point, there is very, very little switches which can do passive and active PoE at the whim of a click. And the feature set is great. They don't have any configuration issues. The UI is easy. It has a full-featured CLI and everything. And it's at the same price point as the CRS switches.
Yeah. On the flip side of that, the UniFi switches are the exact opposite of that, with a very slim set of things that you can do. But they're very easy to configure. Like, I set up two of them today, and you just go into the UniFi software and set up the networks that you want and the VLANs you want, and then go in each port and click, 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 and you're done. And even select multiple ports at a time and say all these belong to this VLAN. And, you know, it's very easy, very slick, but it doesn't have – I didn't see anything for LACP or LLDP, right, or any of those other things. It does have spanning tree, but you can't configure it. It's in there. Because if you hook it up to a MikroTik and you add more than one VLAN on the device, you have to turn spanning tree off on the MikroTik bridge, or you lose access to it, which is kind of took me 10 minutes of Googling to find that out.
Yeah, it's because you're supposed to use an edge router. in those. I don't
yeah.
Know
yeah.
No, you're supposed to use the Unify router.
Yeah, I'm sorry.
You have that whole system.
Yeah.
The security gateway device. The
Which makes me wonder, are they going to... Oh, like with the consumer... Well, no, because that's enterprise, not consumer. So the consumer stuff goes to your house, the enterprise... Yeah, all right. So they'll keep those two separate. And
They've got IGMP snooping and DHCP guard, which is DHCP snooping, and then they've got the broadcast, multicast, and unicast broadcast storm stuff in there. And
on the Unify
suite? That's, yeah, and that's about it. So, that's about all there is on that thing.
But
not a whole lot.
I guess 95...
It's got poor isolation, too.
But does the CRS even have IGMP snooping?
It has DHCP snooping built in. I don't know.
No, IGMP, no.
No. Yeah. Greg was just talking about their Mac VLANs. That's actually available on the likes of the TP-Link, so it's just logging in to check a few. So the Mac and protocol-based VLANs, you can actually do them on the TP-Links.
You can do that on most of, you know, good switches. Yeah.
I'd love to see is that MakerTik actually for the command line do have like a grab market share. Like I think if they want to grab market share with the CRS, they really have to have a command line that makes sense from that. Let's say likes what Tom was saying when he's building a moderately complex or a moderately, I won't say complex, but a standard level of complexity enterprise network that he can do it in about half an hour as opposed to 5 hours. I think that's a big thing. The workflow, as I often harp on about, the workflow is so important to product adoption,
So would you say the CRS is probably a good fit for an office environment where they only have one device? You have one device, everybody plugs into it, and you're done, right?
Yeah.
Yeah.
All it takes is one time of somebody thinking that they're plugging one end of the cable to something else, and they actually plug it back into the device, or they have two, wall ports that go back to a patch panel, and they're both plugged into the switch, and somebody plugs in instead of from the wall to the computer, they end up wall to wall, and then you've got there's no SCP.
Down. Users hate dangling cables, so they'll plug it right back in to
when you have wire rate performance with in hardware, like your visibility into what's happening in the network is even less, where SCP is even more important.
I do think, like, I suppose I would say it has huge potential. And in fairness, I was talking to Yanis about it, because I like to give Yanis loads of feedback, which I'm sure he's delighted with.
Absolutely.
He kind of goes, here's Tom. He's not going to give me any feedback. So I melt his head for a few minutes. But they were saying, like the guys at the MakerTik table were saying that with 7, they're trying to merge the CRS features with what CPU can do, and that you'll have like the way the FastPath checkbox is. I'm not too sure how successful it's going to be. But their ambition is that it'd be like a bridge in a VLAN, and it's like switching support, so it offloads it to hardware. I still think to grab market share, they need like what Tom was saying, LSCP at a minimum, and spanning tree. Even like they don't have to have like infinite like per VLAN spanning tree, although I do really like the idea of that, because that's one thing, let's say, I see with the limitation with the likes of TP-Link, where they've only 8 instances of spanning tree. So, for MSTP, so you can't actually run it per VLAN unless you have less than 8 VLANs.
Yeah, which makes me curious. Aren't MakerTik, they're just using off-the-shelf chips, right? This is probably the same thing that TP-Link and all those other guys are doing it, so...
I don't believe so, Greg. Far as I know, so TP-Link use Marvel or Broadcom, while the lads were using, as far as I know, Qualcomm or Athros-based chips back in the day.
Most of your switches coming out now are all Broadcom chips, like the IgniteNet switches, the Ubiquiti switches, Juniper switches. It's all the same Broadcom chips. So if the Juniper QFX 5100 can do it, then the Unify should be able to do it too.
In the terms of the Broadcom, like there's the ones that I'm aware of is Broadcom and Marvel, let's say, are the big players, let's say, for your OEM switches. And I believe Broadcom may be slightly better in terms of their support. I believe the Netonic switches that legend that we interviewed in the Whisper Palooza one, I think they're using a Vitas chipset, which I'm not too sure what its feature set and our stability is. One thing I would have said is that my experience with Marvel-based chips and Broadcom-based switch chips is quite positive. You know, they're stable, they work, they're easily configurable. And obviously I'd be hoping that the Microtik switches are all three of those in the future as well. Like I said, I'm sure they're stable, but it's just the workflow and configuring them is tricky at the moment.
Indeed. So, I think we've beat the switch thing to death, and at some point we should probably dive a little bit more into it.
Actually, before we go, I have just one last thing. All the switch manufacturers that implement STP, please, for the love of everything, let me choose an STP path cost standard. Thank you. No, it's a huge issue, basically, because for a bit of background, there is three standards which dictate how STP picks a link cost, right? There is the oldest one, which is, I think, .D, which is from 95, and of course we usually don't want 20 years old standards sneaking up on us. And then there you have two newer standards, right? And the problem is that pretty much all of the implementations of STP in across all the vendors don't let you choose a PAFCO standard. And then if you have like a cross-vendor network, you usually end up with things that one switch is implementing, you know, the oldest standard, one switch is implementing the intermediate, and one switch is implementing the newest. And then you just have a whole mess where your PAF costs are calculated, you know, just wildly. And it's the same thing with current Microtik STP implementation inside of the software bridge. So currently you have to like configure. So when I configure Microtik software bridge and enable STP on it, I have to configure passcode for every port manually because it defaults to the oldest standard. And it's the same thing for Ubiquiti Edge switches. There you have to do all of this manually. So that was just like a please to all of the vendors. Just let me have one checkbox which will configure the path cost on all the ports automatically. HP does it, and that's why I love HP switches. And that's that.
I thought 802.1D was replaced by Rapid like in 2004, 2005, or 2006.
No, it's not AD. It's actually path cost standards are separate standards.
Or 802.1D.
Unless I am mistaken, which I could be. But the point is that, you know, you could actually use an older path cost standard to the spanning tree standard you use.
Very cool.
Which is like in the Microtik, you can just choose rapid spanning tree, but still have old path cost calculation, and that, you know, just creates issues. And then when you have to configure it for every single port on your 48-port switch, oh, God.
It sounds like fun to me. I don't know why you're complaining. Because we all have tons of time on our hands.
Yes, of course. I want to click manually 48 times. That's like my favorite thing to do. Yeah.
So something that popped back in my head when you were talking about Giannis, and it's always good to see Giannis, man. He seemed to be in better spirits now that they had a training guy that was kind of lightening the load as far as that stuff went, which was good. And he was talking about something he specifically said I need to tell people about is the HTTP, the hierarchical token bucket version 6 diagram that he put out. I'm not sure if they've actually added any language to it because right now it's a super confusing, highly detailed picture. And I'm assuming he's going to add some stuff to it. So now I can check that off the list that, yes, I did say it, Giannis. But I'm going to say we're coming up on the hour plus mark, hour like 15. So normally this is where people have fallen asleep. So let's try and put a bow on it. So one thing we're going to try and do, I think, is try and do more kind of targeted, smaller ones when we have like an interesting topic with subject matter expert. We can kind of get them on it and do that stuff.
I think we've promised that before, right?
I have no idea. I never promised it. I think Mike promised it, and he never followed through, and I blame him.
Ooh, shots fired.
Oh, yeah, yeah, yeah.
So blame the guy.
But as soon as Alex proposed it, I was like, that's a brilliant idea. Let's do that, Alex. What does that say, Mike?
Well, that's why I made the proposal. So.
But let's see. So one thing I did want to talk about is Thomas, kind of in the closing thing. I definitely want Thomas to tell us about Unimus. Did I say that right?
Yes.
Unimus. All right. And any new projects that he might be working on, usually he can't talk about any, so he gave us kind of a quick and dirty on Unimus, and I would love to do just kind of a little mini one where he tells us about Unimus at some point in the future when he's ready to do all that. No pressure. I don't want to pressure you whenever you're ready.
Oh, okay, so I just finished a 5-minute monologue, and here I go again, right?
Bring it home.
Oh, we love man.
All right, so I've been working on a project for the last about half a year, which is now finally public, and it's called Unimus, and it's at unimus.net, and I think we'll just put a link somewhere so people don't have to figure out how to type that. And I'm really hyped about it. I'm really happy that it's finally going out, and basically it's a configuration backup utility with a lot of change management and change auditing and features. And it's cross-vendor. It's meant to be as simple to possible to deploy and as simple as possible to use with a really low barrier of entry. The from basically the beginning, the main design consideration for it was just to, you know, have no hassle, easy to set up, easy to use, and deployable pretty much everywhere in minutes. So I'm hoping to release or start doing an open beta by the end of the month, and there is a sign up on the website, and I could talk for a long time about it. And currently, it supports MikroTik, Ubiquiti, HP, and Cisco support is coming soon. And it's meant to, you know, get you proper backups and proper tools to see how your config changes between points in time as simple and fast as possible, which I think would, you know, is a really one of the essential things that you need to have in your network: proper versioning and proper, you know, just change auditing and change management issues, and even to have backups, right? If something breaks and you have a backup, it's a huge difference to just upload that backup and have it back in working order, or spend, you know, possibly hours troubleshooting and then putting it back into proper configuration like it was before. So it's meant for that, and that's like the fast, short version.
So automated, revision control, what else? Multi-vendor support. Also, you were talking about before, or I was talking about before, how much you like NetXMS, and you've got the ability to dump from any system right into this and then have it kind of backing up your infrastructure like automatically, right?
Yeah, so if you are using NetXMS in your infrastructure, it's just like one checkbox, write IP address, username, and it will automatically synchronize with NetXMS all your devices. So if you are using NetXMS, you don't even have to touch Unimus when you add a new device into your network. So you just add it into NetXMS, and Unimus will pull it from there and start backing it up completely automatically. And if you don't, you can just, you know, put a comma-separated CSV file in there, or just paste a bunch of IP addresses, and it will completely automatically discover what device is at which IP address, what credentials it should use, and start backing it up. So like I said before, the point is just to make it as easy for the user to have that end goal without going through all the hassle of like massive configuration and etc. So basically how it works is you just give it credentials that you use across your network. It can be, you know, one credentials if you have an SSO system, or 10 of them, and then just give it IP addresses, and it will do magic and just back up all your devices from there.
Magic.
And yeah, like I said, I could talk for a really long time about it, but I've I support tons of deployment options, so you can deploy it in whatever way you see fit. You can deploy it locally. You can deploy it as a hosted cloud solution. So, you know, you can, yeah, it's, you have many options locally. You have like Windows installer, Debian packages, or, you know, just tons of stuff. And I don't want to, we are already running for an hour and a half, so I don't want to just keep going, but I could really talk about it for a long time.
I definitely want to do like a live demo where you kind of go through. So we'll let you murder us then with it. But it's obvious that he is extremely excited about this. And I haven't seen Thomas get his teeth into anything that he didn't just murder. So it's going to be an awesome product. I can't wait to get my hands on it and give it a go. Alex, what's new and funky in your part of the day? So one thing that I am slightly angry at Alex about is his boss. I'm blaming his boss because his boss started talking about all this amazing stuff that Alex is doing. I don't even know if you've ever told anybody where you work. I'm not going to tell him unless you want to tell him. But it's really crazy stuff they're doing on a global scale using MikroTik and all kinds of crazy security stuff just this secret life of Alex Hart up there. It's pretty amazing. I don't know if you want to give us any insight into that or just tell us about some interesting things that you are doing or looking forward to. What you got?
Yeah, so the big thing there is just when you're dealing with large infrastructure, being able to manage it, being able to dive in and diagnose issues and proactively set things up so that things are easier to manage, and hopefully you don't run into as many problems that way. There's a lot of interesting things that we're doing, both customer facing and also internally to support our employee networks. Latest thing that I've been working on is Proxmox and looking at that as an alternative to VMware on the employee network side of things. So we're experimenting with Proxmox and Ceph. And that's pretty exciting.
Is the driver for that optimization or saving money or both? Or
we've already got a pretty good setup with VMware and ESX, vSphere. But we're really trying to find something that maybe solves a few extra things, does what we're already doing, and can save money. So it's definitely, from what I've seen so far, not as polished and dummy-proof as VMware, but it's one of those things where I see a lot of potential and there's a lot of cost savings to be had. So we'll see where it goes. It might just be an experiment, or it might be something that changes how we do things.
That's cool, man. All right, Miller. Yeah, I know you're usually super secret squirrel. So anything interesting other than you got a new house? So he's pimping the two houses, Slumlord action. Like a player.
Yeah.
Bam.
We had the home inspection today, and it went okay. It's a 12-year-old house with 12-year-old house problems. So, you know, HVAC is close. The hot water heater actually has a problem. It's stuff like that. But it's probably going to be going on through sale. And hopefully next time we do the podcast, it'll be from my new office.
There you go.
The frog room.
Very cool.
Yeah.
So anything new and interesting you want to talk about, or is everything hush-hush? Because I know you're usually pretty quiet about everything.
It's got a whole lot of new business. We're super busy.
Right. And,
lot going on. So
life's busy for you. I get it, man. I get it.
Yeah.
All right.
That's a good thing.
Some people say that. I think if you own the company, that's a great thing. If you're a lowly slave like us, it gets pretty rough. Hammy, what's new and exciting other than your illustrious world travel on everybody else's dime? What else is new? What kind of shows are you going to?
I'm gonna find some more dimes so I can do some of these trips.
Mm-hmm.
Well, one of our mini series where Mike's at today.
Well, like in the next 2 months, I've got 3 conferences.
Exactly.
4. I'm speaking in one of them, and at 2 more, 3 more.
Secretly, Mike's actually a booth babe.
He's not in his bikini. A secret. Look at this.
Yeah. Mm.
if I wasn't such a booth babe, how did I manage to arrange that?
Yeah, that's right. That's Mike's new news. He locked it down. He liked it so much he put a ring on it.
Oh yeah.
Yeah,
or she did.
Yeah, I saw the.
You joined that family, huh?
I saw the photos today. It looked like it was a pretty good time, man.
It was.
Mm-hmm. And she still seems so normal, which perplexes me. I don't see how that happened.
Yeah.
I can't explain it.
Was that chloroform?
How does she put up with you?
I don't ask questions I don't want the answer to.
Heavy sedation.
Yeah, you've got a lifetime to figure that out, I guess.
All right, Mr. Smith, you've been awfully quiet tonight. I'm wondering if you're okay.
I'm okay.
Well, it's what, 2 a.m.?
Been early in the morning, kind of 4 in the morning.
Well, what's new and exciting? What's new and exciting you could tell us about?
Well, Mike Thomas was talking about B2B flow spec, and it was annoying me that he knew something that I didn't. So I said I better look this up and start working on it.
Not that I knew something. I knew something about BGP security that you didn't know.
So I was looking at it, and delighted to report that a lot of providers don't like implementing it. So I was like, okay. So we're kind of haggling, and one of my providers has come back. They'll remain nameless for now, but they said, if you run DDoS traffic through our network, we're going to hit you with 100%, not 95 percentile. And I was like, nice. That's really awesomely friendly of you.
How sweet.
So for the burst. So they said, we don't want that traffic anywhere near our network. That's great. So
then they should make their network better, so you know none of it ever touches.
I think I'm going to reply to them and say I'm not instigating the DDoS. I'm not like delivering. You know, it's not. I'm not using them as a delivery platform for my DDoSes. But yeah, so kind of working on a few projects.
If they don't want the DDoS, then they should support BGP flow spec. So you can tell them, hey, there's a DDoS. Shut it down.
Exactly. That's. So, so I'm kind of talking to, but it looks like I'll have to go a more traditional route, like loads of internet exchange links to kind of reduce risk. But it's a pain in the ass because it's a lot more expensive. You know, the layer 2 transit is a significantly higher cost than a standard IP transit. So, just looking at a few different options on that type of stuff. So, kind of interesting, actually. But I do think flow spec is too far-reaching, that they kind of tried to do too much with it. But we'll talk about that again. But there's stuff that you definitely would never want to accept from your customer in terms of flow spec, like where you're saying block things based on source. But you know, so it's almost unimplementable because it's like, oh, block Greg Sowell's IP because he's DDoSing me. You know, they would never work on the whole trust model. It's like,
sure, no. It's a source bait. It's source destination.
Yeah, source and destination.
Is attacking
but if they do destination-based stuff, I think that's workable.
Well, I thought it was them in tandem. So like in traditional trigger black hole, it just says everybody going to this destination, just stop it. So that destination basically becomes defunct, and the DDoS wins, right? Whereas FlowSpec actually says, this source going to this destination block it, so legitimate traffic, or some anyway, should still be able to get through, right?
What you could also do, like, based on packet parameters, so you could do it, let's say, based on destination. So I'm being attacked by DNS amplification. I could say, block everything with source port 53 going to this address.
Mm-hmm.
So I think that, so it should be like, if you could classify based on destination and our protocol, that should be allowed. That's implementable from a trust model point of view, because I'd only be able to block my IPs with certain protocols and ports going to those IPs, which would do what I need to get done. But Yeah, no, but in fairness, I can understand there are limits to, like Cisco were talking about, how many TCAM cells they use for this type of stuff. So I could see kind of it being used as potential attack vendor or vector for their platform.
So what annoys me, too, is that Cisco only supports it on the ASR series routers and the CRS routers, the carrier router switches or whatever. So most organizations aren't going to be able to support that, as well as MikroTik doesn't support FlowSpec yet either. So triggered black hole is still kind of your only thing.
No, I'm looking at seeing if there's a way of going for it, like with just communities, but kind of similar to your QoS method that you were doing before, which I think is a good idea. So I'll be dusting down that presentation, robbing all your ideas, and presenting them as my own.
Fantastic. Hey, man, sincerest form of flattery.
No, so that's the kind of stuff I'm working on at the moment. So we have a few projects in the pipeline for DDoS protection, and we have a few uncooperative transit providers who are saying, no effing way, get the F off my network, no way. So I'm trying to tell them to man the F up and just give me what I effing want.
Fair enough. That sounds not unreasonable.
Hello, AS174, by the way.
All right, Mr. Wilson. what do you have new and exciting or going? I remember you told us some cool stuff last time. I don't want to rehash it for you. I'll let you tell us about it.
Well, Mike and I will be at Chinog this week, the Chicago Network Operators Group. I'll be at NANOG, which is coming to Chicago. So if anybody's within Chicago driving distance or whatever, I highly encourage you to get to NANOG. That's where the big boys play. You know, you'll have the Hurricane Electrics and the Netflixes and all those folks running around. Heck, even since our last attempt at this, I have three IPv6 only networks to bring online. So that's kind of cool.
Very cool.
I did sign a publishing deal, so there will be some written works coming out here probably near the end of the year.
That's awesome, man. That's awesome. And I know you weren't planning on telling anybody, but you're releasing those breakdance manuals, right? How to pop and lock?
yep. Pop, lock, and drop it.
There you go, brother. Keeping it hot. That's awesome, man. That's so cool, dude. You guys are doing some awesome stuff up there. I have been trying to get to Chicago. I don't know if it's ever going to happen, but I want to come up there and see you guys and all that magic you guys are doing up there. I guess last and certainly least is me. So one thing I'm doing, I'm doing another Lynda course pretty soon, and it's going to be on troubleshooting, right? Which I think is a really good one. So it's kind of a hole in their learning paths, right? It's just there's no kind of hands-on troubleshooting methodology. So I've been tasked to come up with some things to troubleshoot, which is how I'm soliciting anything anybody would like to see troubleshot, right? So it's going to be like layer 1, layer 2, wireless, rogue DHCP on the network. How do you find those guys? You know, just things like that. And then quick mitigation techniques, command line tools to find that stuff. So if you guys have any suggestions, be sure to shoot them my way. And obviously any of the guys in the pictures up here, anticipating several responses from all of you. Tom has sent me a novel on some of the things he thinks we should do over at Lynda. And so he's the man with the ideas. Another thing I wanted to talk about was I'm doing the StrayNet project now. So you guys can look it up and find me. So it's MDU ISP services. If you're an ISP and you want to bring internet to an MDU, I'm happy to pick it up and deliver service all the way down the end user, put a router in their room and do all the software back in, profit sharing with the MDU, all that good stuff. You guys can bring me some work. I want to compensate you for it too. So that's going to be my next adventure as well. And then I have a potentially big partner coming up with some new stuff. Who knows what'll happen? Less sleep for me, obviously. And then when I'm doing these Lynda courses, I kind of shut off, but I promise not to do that anymore. I'm going to try and stay on top of this stuff. I guess that's all that's new and interesting from me, if you can call that interesting. But definitely trying to step up our game on this stuff and make sure that we record audio more frequently. That'll be a lot more fun. And then just pictures of us. I was tempted to just release the video with no words as an April Fool's joke, but I didn't do it. So any closing words from anybody? I know Alex closed it up nicely last time. You wanna put a cherry on top, Alex? You were telling everybody you're telling everybody to submit ideas and questions. Come on.
Right, yeah. So we're here not just to talk to each other and ourselves and hear ourselves talk, but really to cover topics that everybody's interested in hearing. So last time I just summed it up by saying, you as a viewer, if there's something you want to hear us talk about, if there's ideas that you have, if there's questions you have, if you see, you know, new things out there that we're not already talking about, feel free to drop us a tip on our Facebook page or whatever, and probably Mike will pick that up pretty quick. And,
oh, yeah.
We'll put it together and talk about it.
Yeah, absolutely. And I guess from all over the world, thank you guys. Keep coming back. We look forward to it. And thanks and bye.
Good night, everybody.